Well, welcome everyone. Tonight is Module 20. Can you believe that? We're in Module 20. Class 11, and our topic is Lojong. And tonight we're scheduled to do point 6 of the Lojong slogans. Did everyone has a copy of the list? So I thought today I would actually start with a review and give kind of an overview of the territory we covered and where we are at this point. And funny, I was thinking of the word review. So it's about the view, and we're going back and look again. So it's a new look, or to look again. And as you know, view is very important in Buddhist teachings. Almost, it seems that every teaching you encounter, you always want to ask, what is the view? And it's very important to start with that, because it's easy to misinterpret what's being given if you don't understand what the view is. And Trungpa Rinpoche always talked about combing your hair. So that was about going back to the root, or going back again and again through the view and the origin of the teaching. So I thought that was actually appropriate somehow for tonight, since we've been at this for a little while. And we have been jumping around a bit because of Joseph's schedule. A lot of it has to do with the fact that I want to give him the hardest, the hardest slogans that don't fit right in the order that works. But anyway, so you can criticize me for that. But
darn slogans.
So slogans. So as you know, the Lojong is presented in seven main points with 59 slogans. And in Module 20, we're covering five of the seven main points. So it's a little confusing because we have been jumping around. But we're basically covering everything except point 4. Well, maybe you hit that at another point. Those two slogans, 17 and 18, and point 7, which is the batch at the end. That could be a whole module, I think, practically. So, and anyway, I think it's helpful not to cram too much in. Even so, this does feel like a lot to bite off. And we have to keep coming back over and over again to revisit this material. It's so rich and so deep that I think we can learn more each time around. So there is actually a logic and a natural progression through these 59 slogans. And we actually could ask, well, what is it and why are they arranged this way? So I took a little time to actually contemplate that. And I realized that there is a very important progression. So if you look at point 1, first train in the preliminaries, and it says the heading of that, the preliminaries, which are the basis for Dharma practice. So the point of that is that these preliminaries provide the motivation to engage in practice. And these four preliminaries, do you remember what they are? The first one,
Jalisna,
precious human birth, yes.
Four reminders. Yeah.
Yeah, and the second one,
his body will be a corpse.
His body will be a corpse, impermanence and death. And the third one,
karma,
karmic cause and result. And the fourth one,
samsara,
the suffering of samsara, and the importance of attaining enlightenment through exertion. So when we contemplate these four preliminaries, the point of them is to give us a motivation to work with the Lojong slogans. Because who the heck would ever want to do this, really? You know, when you really go into it, it's like, ah! So it's a motivation in terms of why we're actually working with this. And the point is that we have this life now to actually engage in this practice. This is what we've got. Whatever we're dealing with, whatever our life is, this is it. And it's important not to waste it. So the first point is really vital, although it's short. But if we don't realize what the motivation is, there's not going to be a lot of juice in the engine to go very far. So this carries us farther, and it's important to look at it over and over again. And first we start working on ourself, so that way we can better relate to others. So if I said to you, is Lojong a Hinayana in the Hinayana or the Mahayana, how would you answer that question?
Yes.
It's Hinayana? Hinayana. Why would you say that?
Because they're really all instructions for your, for you, as to how to, because they're all instructions toward for the individual.
And what's the motivation, though?
The motivation for.
For working, who are you working with? I mean, you can't really do Lojong in a vacuum, right?
Right.
You're working with others.
Right.
And do you have some more comments?
Yes, you are working with others, but you're first trying to get your... I think of trying to get yourself straight. You know, trying to get yourself... trying to find that understanding and that bodhicitta.
So...
Yourself, kind of get an understanding of that before you can really go out and but I don't want to say do the benefit, because everything you do is for the benefit of all beings.
Right.
But this seems more it's individual.
Well, we do start with ourselves. That's
right.
Sure. That's true. But we actually are engaging. This is a practice of engaging with others and working with others. And these are tools for us to know how to do that. So it's really considered a Mahayana practice because...
Totally.
Yes.
Well, even though the tools are inner, you're right.
They're inner.
About that. These are things you do with your mind, so it's all completely inner.
It's very... Right.
Yeah.
It's very...
But the motivation...
It's an instruction on how you're inner...
Yep.
For you to be aware of.
Right, because you're transforming
right.
self in order to actually be of benefit and react properly and help other people. And the bodhicitta aspect is what makes that the Mahayana.
So
that's my understanding.
To me, drive all blames into one, this seems very Hinayana.
But it's taking responsibility so that you can have space enough for others.
Right.
That's what I...
Mm-hmm. Right, mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it opens the space
mm-hmm.
for others.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just focused on yourself and not, you know, not speaking or
mm-hmm.
not eating food after noon or like all these containing principles in Hinayana so that you
mm-hmm.
don't spill out. You're actually allowing yourself to engage fully with the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's Mahayana. Okay. So, what we're doing...
Sure. What's the split, then, with the Mahayana or the bodhicitta vows? How does that split the Mahayana or the from the Hinayana?
The bodhisattva vows?
Yeah.
That you vow to liberate all beings.
Yeah,
it's not about yourself. You're vowing to liberate all beings.
You're actually postponing your own... Nirvana, if you want, before you want to get all sentient beings to go there before you do.
Yeah, so this
you're
is
not splitting
upon taking
anything.
The vows.
You're not splitting anything. You're taking a step beyond.
Okay, well, that's, you know, so this, you know, discrete
yeah.
difference. But what I meant was, how would you describe the discrete difference between Hinayana and the Mahayana?
Well, Hinayana
is
you're working on non-self, You're disassembling the self. So that's one good way to start with understanding what that is. And you're containing the emotions. You are shutting off. The monks aren't allowed to be around women. They don't eat afternoon. You're cutting off all those things that cause the arisal of passion, aggression, and ignorance by cutting off that around you. In the Mahayana, we use everything as manure to enrich our practice, and we're not afraid to contact situations that cause the arisal of emotion, because that gives us the opportunity, you could say, to work through these things. So it's a different emphasis.
But still utilizing the Hinayana.
Yes.
You're not saying, I'm not using the Hinayana tools and stuff. You're just integrating
them. Yes. You don't leave it behind.
Right.
You never leave anything behind.
Right. Okay, if I could just ask one more. Then the Hinayana emphasizes, let's say, the human virtues, whereas the Mahayana emphasizes the paramitas, you know, the transcendental virtues.
They're not human?
No, they somehow transcend the human virtues.
They do.
Well, I don't know. That's not even being very fair to one's potential. I mean, humans have vast potential as humans. We are not simply reduced to some kind of a subspecies that is only problematic. The Hinayana is basically learning how to take responsibility for yourself. It's basically, as has been discussed, the notion of withdrawing from the engagements that cause confusion, and real simplicity, attaining deep simplicity, peace, and that simple virtue.
Tranquility.
And it has to do with harmlessness. The Mahayana has to do with embracing the world and engaging with the world. And the emphasis is not on you anymore about attaining anything particularly, because you're supposed to be doing that in your Hinayana practice, which you get engaged with. But then the real vision is to basically benefit others. Others are more important than you are.
This is a natural transition. What, if I may say, that it isn't that you have to make an effort at some point you have developed enough stability within yourself that you can actually trust yourself. You've experienced your own confusion. You recognize you don't want to pollute that. You don't want to spread that everywhere. You've been working with your own mind. And you look up and all of a sudden you see you're not the only one who's been suffering. Your heart is, you make a connection with other people's suffering and it awakens compassion in yourself. And that's sort of the trigger for the Bodhisattva vow. Mm-hmm. But it's a natural progression. It isn't, you make that happen by processing your own confusion and pain, and by observing where you do pollute. Like if you're pissed off and you yell and scream, you kind of recognize you maybe shouldn't be doing that. It causes harm. And your heart, because you've tamed yourself somewhat, you get to look around and see how much other people are suffering, and your heart opens. So that's how it happens versus an effort.
Well, why do the Theravadins kind of stop there at that point of transition?
Who says they do? We don't know anything about it. We haven't talked about it.
Well, they do. They do. They clearly discriminate themselves from you without saying that there's a contradiction. They just say we stop here.
Well, you can't listen to everyone simultaneously. Your head will split. We're teaching a particular thing. We're not denying their teachings. We're not. There's no criticism here of Theravadins.
It's not where we're going.
I'm not criticizing.
That's not where we're going.
And we don't necessarily know what they're doing because we don't have a Theravadin teacher here.
I was thinking more from the point of view, or even maybe fruition. Have you guys talked about one one-fold egolessness versus one-and-a-half-fold or two-fold egolessness?
Yeah, we did.
We have.
You did. You covered it.
That would get complicated.
We have.
Yeah,
but
I don't want to complicate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'd like to actually... So I guess we have to decide, do we want to try to do things where we break in groups, or do we want to just stay with one conversation?
How do we...
One.
I like
okay. The one.
Yeah, I like
we're okay with that? Okay, we'll change our plan.
That's okay.
Fine. Okay. We were going to do groups to just have a chance to talk more about individual slogans, but, you know, we can do that at another time. Okay. So, Michael. Okay, we're going. All right. We're just, the rocket's taking off. Okay, go ahead. Wrong board.
I just want to tease Emily a little bit.
Oh, no.
Because... I've been around Trungpa Rinpoche since 1973. I have never, ever heard him say, comb your hair, but I've heard him say hundreds of times, back to square one.
I've heard him say, when you comb your hair, many times.
Yeah, he said that many times. Oh, yeah.
He said it yesterday.
Interesting. No more.
What's that? He said it yesterday. No, that's a very classic one.
Just being a smartass.
Oh, yes. Oh, this is important. Okay, back to my notes. Okay.
Oh, my goodness, your notes.
So, what is this about, Lojong? And I really think it's the main point is to uncover our ego and how we jump at different situations and we start to see how our ego reacts. And then there's some kind of zap of self-awareness. And the Lojong slogans help us to sharpen that point where we can see when we react to things, and then we can learn to flip it. So when we talk about Tonglen is really flipping the way we usually live our life and what we want. We take in and draw in everything we want, and we push away everything we don't want. So we have this conditioned response all the time to sort and reject or draw in. And Tonglen is really the practice that begins to, you could say, pop that situation or lubricate it, that you're actually reversing what you normally do or what you want to do. And these slogans do the same thing. When you say, be grateful to everyone, you go, really? You've got to be kidding. Like, what's your first reaction, you know? So the slogans are really designed to cut, you know, undercut the ego. And that's the real power of the practice.
I guess if, when I look at points 1 through 10, that feels very Hinayana. But then beyond that, yeah, you know what I mean? 1 through 10 is...
1 through 10, well, that's actually all Mahayana, I think.
That's Bodhicitta's Mahayana. Absolute and relative Bodhicitta.
2 through 10, at least.
2 through 10. Yeah.
2 through 10.
One
right.
could
right.
be considered okay. more Mahayana, but not necessarily, because your view is so big.
Okay.
Megan.
Yeah. When I was on retreat, I was working with the Lojong slogans, and what I found, the term that kept coming up to me is to perforate my habits. So I've recognized that when I'm in certain situations, just habitually see it, driving, for example. Somebody does something that is you consider to be dangerous, and there's an immediate judgment, not just on the action, but on the person in the car. That it's almost like they hold within the essence of wrongness for what they did.
Yeah.
So I think the Lojong slogans have a way of kind of making you suddenly quite aware of what you just did right there. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully, over a lot of time, I'll be able to begin to perforate, you poke holes in that habit, as opposed to severing, which I don't ever see. I don't think I've ever had a habit I just sever. I think it's been a long, drawn-out process.
Wearing down, don't you think?
Exactly, of just perforating, and making it kind of into Swiss cheese, and eventually, hopefully, it will melt and go away. And maybe it won't, but at least I'll be aware of it. And so that's kind of what these do for me, is just it keeps it forefront in my mind that these are my habits. These are what I'm doing, and specifically, they're habits that are often tied to specific triggers or events or scenarios. And so it's just making me very aware of what my mind is constantly doing. And it's a little unnerving.
Right. So you're replacing it with other habits here.
Yeah.
Mental habits.
I'd say a habit of awareness.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Absolutely. You get triggered, right, as something comes up. Right.
But your reaction can be different. That's the thing. We can transform how we
react. They call it mind training, right?
Mind training.
Well,
right.
I think it's better to view this more as a response than a reaction. Mm-hmm. And in fact, response is really the meaning
that's
of bodhicitta, is really natural responsiveness. You're responding to situations in the best possible way, as opposed to reacting to them, which is just basically going into some kind of automatic kick back, or something.
Yeah.
It's actually beautiful that once you start working with these, our own behavior is the trigger to wake us up.
It's true.
And
the obstacle's the path.
Yeah. And it's not saying if the world is filled with bodhi, it's saying when. Transform all mishaps onto when the world is filled with evil, transform all mishaps into the path of bodhi. That's just the instruction, is that these things will occur. They're part of your path. How do you respond to them, as you were saying, in an aware, awake way? And it's sort of like an owner's manual.
Yeah.
For how to
Yes. And I think, like, point two, I wrote down, it's like your toolkit, how to do it. So point two, the main practice, so this is a clue, it's the main practice, which is training in bodhicitta. So what's point two consist of? The two main points are the absolute bodhicitta, this open, spacious quality, which is where they begin from. They don't start with Tonglen. They start from open space. So it's without judgment. It's just open. And then, within point two, the relative bodhicitta, bingo, right away, is Tonglen. I mean, it's really high up in the list here. There's not a lot of preparation to get there. And that is really, I think, the core of the Lojong practice, is working with Tonglen.
They've got those three objects, three poisons, like in the middle of that. Why is that sandwiched in there like that? Is it fit, or they just put it there first?
Do you see a logic to that when you think about working with three objects, three poisons, and three seeds of virtue?
The objects and the poisons eventually can be transformed into virtue, so I guess in that virtue could be applied to, outside yourself.
Because relative bodhicitta is working in the relative world. So in the relative world, we see objects. And what do we do with objects? I want it.
I don't want it.
I'm going to ignore it. So we have three responses. At least that's how they cut it up in Buddhism. And maybe someone else has more or something. And so then those objects become poisons. But why is that? It's our reaction to them, right? So how is it then they become seeds of virtue? Because you need those objects in order to transform them into virtue. If there were no objects, I mean, that's a ridiculous statement, because everything to us is an object. So it's like the heart of the practice right here, and in terms of these relative bodhicitta statements. And So point two, I think, is really this toolkit. So you've got the tools, you're working with the actual technique. Okay, this is your technique, Tonglen. Then point three is transformation of bad circumstances into the path of enlightenment. And I translated that as appreciating adversity. So instead of saying, I want everything, you know, I really want, my idea of enlightenment is everything is really nice and I don't suffer and everything's good. Okay, and I'm going for that. And that's why I meditate every day, because I'm going to get that outcome. This is saying wrong. That's not the point. It's whatever is happening in your life is your life. And that adversity is the path. That is the path of awakening. So appreciate that. So, yeah, when the world is filled with evil, transform all mishaps into the path of Bodhi. So we now are living in a situation where we have a golden opportunity to actually work every day with our mind and whatever comes up around us. And actually, I have to say, the undercurrent of that for me is complete terror and uncertainty and groundlessness, because every day something is happening that makes me feel less secure and more afraid. So this point three is, okay, work with that. And this is how we do it. So afterwards, you might want to take, you know, each one of these sections and sort of think about it based on where it's heading. Yes?
He said something in this book I thought was a really good sum of the purpose of Lojong, which is our bad habits, we are so familiar in an unwise way, and they're so frequent that it seduces us into thinking that they're inconsequential. So that's such a huge statement.
Can you repeat that?
Our habits that we are so familiar with in an unwise way, and they're so frequent that it seduces us into thinking that they're inconsequential. It comes up, we do it, and I always do that.
Flipped off the driver and say, yeah, that was fine.
No big deal.
Right.
That's what we're making that little judgment in the back of our head that all of these things that this is pointing out to us and saying, yes, it's a deal. Let's pay attention to this. Because when we ignore it, when we just are able to flippantly say, no big deal, that's down that path of ignorance. It's right down the path of just saying, it is what it is. It's how I am. You know, anything else to just say, you know, loving kindness. I don't have to change because I need to love. Which I'm not, you know, trying to trash on that, because you do have to accept where you are in order to go someplace. But if you are all full of loving kindness and acceptance and none of, let's work on this.
Yeah.
Why are you on this? Why are you doing this? So I just, that one sentence just struck me as being so profound about even the little things. And in fact, I would say even the little things are even more important.
Yes.
Because they are often flying under the radar.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The big things we can go, ooh, I just lost my temper there. I got to work on that. But the little subtle things.
The little patterns, too.
Yes.
Or the way you always respond.
Just the, taking a tiny bit of pleasure out of your enemy's problems. Just a little hint of that. And we glaze over that. And this has a particular Lojong slogan exactly for that.
Right.
Which is pay attention to that.
Right.
So this is, to me, that's what it's doing. It's not just pointing out the big stuff. It's pointing out all those little tiny things that just add up.
No wiggle room there.
That's right.
I think the antidote for that is karma as a result. The second reminder.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, karma. It's
Third reminder.
Third reminder, karma.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that one go? Is it like the friends
when death comes, I'm going to be helpless.
Helpless because I've done all these, I've ignored all these times.
Because I
times.
Create karma.
Yeah, I mean, that's right, because I create deeds, karma.
I always develop myself
right.
virtuous actions, thinking this every day I will examine myself.
There you go.
There you go. There that's low jump, too. Examine yourself. So, this is like... What's that? It doesn't...
This is juicy stuff.
Of course it is.
Juicy, it is.
All juicy, right?
It is juicy. It's, this is... What's so great about Lojong, it's not like up there somewhere, you know, in these, you know, highfalutin language and whatever. It's so down to earth, and it's so penetrating. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, if we can really work on it. And it works on many levels. So I think our intention here is try to present some of it and that we all start engaging with it a lot during the day and in our life, and we keep cycling back and go deeper and go further. Yes.
So can I ask one question? You started with the word view.
Yep.
Now, can you explain if the view is all of these encapsulated, or is it always the same view of the preliminaries?
Well, the preliminaries, that's a starting point. But what I'm trying to go through with each one of the points, they seem to be organized in a logical fashion, and there is a progression. So that's what I'm trying to give as the view. So we talked about the preliminaries as the starting point, and then point two, the main practice, is the toolkit. And point three, transformation of bad circumstances into the path of enlightenment, is don't think you're going to get a better life than this. And appreciate adversity. This is useful. It's not to be rejected. Then point four, we haven't discussed, and we probably won't discuss it in detail in this module, but to include it in this list, point four is really like I call it expansion, like carrying the practice into all levels and stages of your life. So it's expanding throughout your entire life and even into death. Apply this exertion and remember to practice. So it's a quality of exertion to expand beyond, I'm just going to do this little bit now and that's it, I'll forget it. But it's actually carrying the practice on for your whole life and into death. And that's what it talks about, the point 18. So we're going to come back to those two points at another time. And then point five is actually the evaluation of mind training. So it's saying, like, how are you doing? And when you're evaluating how you're doing, so now you've even expanded your practice, and now you're stepping back and saying, well, gee, is this making a difference? How am I doing? The question is, how are you going to know if you're making any improvement? And the question is your ego diminishing? I haven't found that to be true. But at least I'm noticing.
Well, I think sometimes you begin to notice more, and so it seems like it's actually worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Because
yeah.
You are noticing so much more, and you're like, whereas you weren't paying attention before.
Right.
So it actually seems like it's getting worse before it gets better.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're just paying attention more.
We all love to laugh about this.
Notable. Heightened neurosis.
Yep.
Oh, you're feeling worse? You must be making progress.
Yeah, that's right. But I think that what made me think just then when you said that is to realize, is not to look at yourself and go criticize yourself and undercut whatever you've been doing, and you say, God, you know, I keep saying that, I'm so mean, I say that same thing over and over again, I'm so irritated all the time, whatever. Okay, then you can, there probably is a slogan for that.
Emily, abandon any hope.
There you go, perfect.
That's always, whenever you're beating yourself up, like, right.
You are here right
now. That's right.
Now.
You're right.
You are what you are.
This
You're
is
wonderful
the path.
Now.
Right.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And you're still screwing up all the time.
Excellent.
Perfect. That's what you're going to be.
What's it called? Abandon what?
Abandon all fruition. What number is that?
That's
number 28.
28.
Abandon.
Any hope.
Any hope of fruition.
Oh.
Which yeah. that goes over really well in this country.
Oh, boy.
This culture.
Yeah. Hard to...
Goal-driven. Keep your eye on the prize.
Keep going.
I think that's
what
one, too.
What's going on in the evaluation of mind training is gaining confidence that you can actually trust your own sense of what's happening.
Yes.
Of the two witnesses, hold the principal one,
right.
Which... doesn't mean to reject the opinions of other people, but to have some sense that you can go beyond what people are saying in real depth because your own confidence is increasing.
Yeah. And always maintain only a joyful mind.
Sure.
Hey, you know, it's okay. Just keep at it. And then point six, which was the point of today, so I guess we'll go into it a little bit here. Point six, then, is the disciplines of mind training. And it's interesting that Trolog Rinpoche calls this the commitments of mind training, and I call these the do's and the don'ts. And there is sort of, you can get caught up in that and say, oh, I hate this, do's and don'ts. But actually, it's about being willing to recommit to Lojong and to persevere, to give these little reminders that you can give yourself, to keep at it. And let's talk a little bit more about that. Do you have some thoughts about point six? Oh, go ahead. Speak.
There are many. Point six is made up of a lot of the don'ts and the abandons.
Yes.
Should I pick one? Or I mean,
sure.
This is where we could actually split up if we have time.
Well,
we're getting towards the end.
Yeah,
so 20 minutes? 10 minutes? Because I would love to hear those, everyone to pick some and chat around it and then bring it back.
Well, we could just do that here.
Maybe.
Okay,
so.
Yeah.
I think at this point,
all right, let's pick. Maybe we could do it that way right here.
Yeah.
Group. All right,
so
go ahead.
Just, I think so, because there isn't time to go out.
Yeah, we won't have
time.
Okay. Okay. So what I'd like you to do is under point six, number 23 through 38, of the slogans, pick one. That just kind of speaks to you, or you have a question about, and throw it out here and let's talk about it.
So I'm a big fan of the abandoned and hope of fruition.
Yes.
I was bringing it up, and Pema just has a great thing where she says, this is about realizing that if you think things will be better when you're better, if only you were smarter, thinner, less picking on other people, then you could be a lovable, good person.
Yeah.
And until you can drop that and say, right now, I'm plenty good. I'm good enough. I don't need to be better. Because the wanting to be better, you can't ever be better because you're always going to want some other better.
Well, the other thing is, that as everything in the Dharma points to, is to recognize the reality of now. That nowness is really the basis for really understanding the truth. And the idea of abandoning hope of fruition is the tendency we can have of putting off. One person described it very interestingly as simply being a willingness to put up with the crap of today because we think it's going to be better later. And, you know, that has nothing to do with being here and making use of the actual reality that we face. This is the only moment we really know.
And as long as we keep on thinking there's some better reality some other time, it could be backwards too. You could be thinking, I think I've gone downhill ever since, you know, a certain point, and that's the end of it. We can basically recognize this is the only time there is to be here. And in some sense, as we familiarize ourselves more with the nature of things as they are this way, we begin to realize that whatever we really need to work with is right in our face right now. And this is it. So, you know, I mean, it's actually a very powerful opportunity to get off that pivot of thinking, you know, it's just got to be better than this summer.
I have a thought, but let others.
Maybe someone else. Let's hear someone who hasn't had a chance to say much. Yeah.
I like a lot of these, but I like the don't transfer the ox's load to cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very Talmudic to me.
I looked that up last month, and I had it all wrong. Mm-hmm. Someone else has got to describe it.
And I think that's just kind of my reaction. I have no idea what they mean, but...
there is a meaning, yeah.
An ox can carry is much stronger than a cow. Just sort of take on the appropriate load, whether it's for yourself or your cow. Sort of be realistic maybe in what you can handle.
Well, don't load, all the shit on somebody else.
Okay. Like, take responsibility.
Take responsibility.
But the reason is this, an ox is much stronger than a cow.
Oh.
So it would be, it's as if it just said don't transfer your shit onto somebody else. But it's specifically, oxen are meant to pull more stuff, you know, heavier stuff. So
it's actually not.
It's
in Tibetan, it's the opposite.
Don't shift a zo's burden to an ox.
Yeah, but that's
a zo, which is a female yak, uh-huh. And that's because the female yak were actually stronger than the ox, but they were more valuable because they were pricier. They could bear more yaks too. So they would take. The idea was put the burden on the ox, even though the yak is stronger because the yak is more valuable. But then you're actually taking something that the yak is quite capable of doing, despite its value to you, and you're putting it onto something that's not quite as fit for that.
What was the value of the cow versus the ox? Do you have any idea?
What's that?
Maybe it doesn't matter. Cultural context.
If the ox dies, it can easily be replaced.
But how do you apply it in your daily life? Or in your own life?
I might not have interpreted the way they meant it.
Well, how would you interpret it?
We can understand the slogan by placing ourselves in the position of the zo and another person as the ox, for we often transfer our responsibilities onto someone less experienced than ourselves and place them under enormous pressure simply because we are disinclined to do something ourselves.
Yeah, that fits.
I never knew
that. Happens all the time.
With us.
Yeah,
They're married,
yes,
by the way.
Absolutely. I talked to Erica about it.
Erica's a good counselor.
And then we shift blame onto that person when the things go wrong.
You don't even know how to make coffee or something.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is about taking responsibility, not what your load is.
Right.
Somebody else's.
And also, say you're pissed off. You had a rough day. Mm-hmm. You come home and you yell at your husband.
Mm-hmm. Of course you yell at.
Or whatever, you know. It's,
or your ox.
The dog.
Shlomi, do you have any thing that's your favorite?
I like the demons. Don't make gods into demons.
Yeah, what's the translation on that?
Okay.
What were you going to
say? I was going to say, don't bring things to a painful point.
Okay, let's do that and we'll come back to yours. Let's start with this one and we'll come back.
A lot of interpretations, but I think it's another one about dealing in the now. If you deal with something that's painful now, instead of delaying it, because the more we delay, the more the story grows. And I mean, sometimes the story gets out of
control,
proportion.
So that would be work with your greatest defilements first.
What is it?
Work with your greatest defilements first.
Well, no, I'm looking at...
I think it means don't postpone what's really in front of you, because, you know, things can get really unbearable if you simply turn away or look the other way when, in fact, it's right in front of your face. I mean, just deal with it on the spot.
I have a whole different...
He actually has a different one.
Yeah, I dig in.
So, number 33 is a total different
Don't bring things to a painful
point. Okay, go ahead.
He actually translated as, don't make insincere comments. Human beings have a tendency to take pleasure in identifying other people's weak points and exploiting them for their own benefit.
Absolutely.
It's the recognition that since we have the... I'm skipping around here a bit. It's the recognition that since we have the impulse to say hurtful things to others, we often attempt to do it in an underhanded way that doesn't immediately appear hurtful.
Right.
I like how it says
that.
It's the subtle
is
stuff.
Or don't act with a twist. It's very similar.
There's some similarities in overall.
I think there's... I love don't ponder others. I've read the interpretation. It's not how I use it, really. I mean, to me, don't ponder others. Don't judge others. Don't make up stories about others to try to... make yourself feel good. And there are so many ways that we ponder others by pondering them as evil or pondering them as anything to make us look good in comparison, you know, in comparison.
So that it
stops you from actually being compassionate for them. For others.
Wonderful. Well, let's hear this.
And he translates that as, don't think about the affairs of others. It's a reminder to us that our criticisms and interpretations about others' lives are simply our own projections and perceptions.
Right.
So instead of categorically condemning people's actions, we should learn to give them the benefit of the doubt.
So it really is, because it's a way I work with judgment on that. And I hear people a lot of time criticizing how someone treats their kids, or shouldn't they do this, or shouldn't they be doing that. And it's only a way to make yourself feel superior.
Jeff?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think for me, I can see the way Kathleen was interpreting it, but like for me, the other way is like I had a situation at work, and like I realized I basically made something so painful, but it was all because of everything that I made up my own mind.
Yeah.
And so, like, I created the pain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I agree with, like, don't put things off. That's one part of it. But the other part for me is, like, once I saw that I was making up the whole thing, like, everything fell away. And then the truth was, like, it wasn't painful. So
you created the
whole
pain.
Thing.
Right.
And because I just had... My mind was, you know, fearful or resentful or whatever. So for me, this is sort of like, it's sort of like this: the sooner I can catch the manufacturing process, the quicker I can stop the production line. But like I had created an entire factory, and it's hard to break. And it was so now, like as soon as I see like a little screw is a little off, I tighten it right away before it gets too big. And then it keeps it from getting
out of control. I like your analogy for manufacture.
That's how you get it.
Yeah, it's all I try to use for myself, all meaning that I see in people, things, situations is manufactured by me.
Yeah.
All of it. Every inch of meaning doesn't exist out there. It's made here.
Well, we did bring up that earlier about just the notion that we create our own perceptions, actually.
Yeah.
That's a hard one to actually believe, because we really... But because we keep on thinking our perceptions are completely shaped and informed by what's coming
reality.
At us. But,
yes.
You know, in fact, what this is about is taking that back.
Yep.
Is actually taking the projections back. So I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of just the way you described how we manufacture the whole process of pleasure and pain.
Yep.
You know, and so why do we do this? I mean, this is basically asking us to look at that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I relate to the one, don't try to be the fastest.
Darn.
You want to be the fastest. Right. Yeah. Tell us more.
What were you thinking of that?
Well, she is competitive.
Yeah.
Competitive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's just, for me, like, I can understand, like, just in generality, just everyone is just moving at such a fast speed. And it's almost like a competition.
Mm-hmm. It is a competition.
You know, and it's like, oh, I read 60 emails. Well, I read 50. You know, it's like, so what? You know, what's the point? Like, how is that? Like, I don't know. Just like, there's this undertone of competition, of getting things done the fastest, efficient way that you can get them done. And if you do it the fastest way, you know,
you win.
Yeah. You win, and not only that, but you know, you're a really good person.
Well, that's what he says too.
You know, and so because you did everything fast and efficient, you know, you can, you know, feel good today. You know, this whole like fast thing. It's like, let's all just slow down.
That's a good interpretation, I think. And notice that it doesn't say, "Don't be the fastest." It says, "Don't try to be the fastest."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you got that.
Yeah. Go ahead. Wait.
And the way he interprets it is, don't aim to win. Mm. It only engenders pride and arrogance when we do a little better than someone else, and gives rise to resentment and envy, jealousy, when we perform a little bit worse. We only obsess over winning because of the elation we experience when we have gained superiority over others and see someone else losing. This is only an illusory victory fabricated by the samsaric mind, and will experience many obstacles if we continue to see things this way.
Elise?
I think that manufactured thing again.
Absolutely.
Joseph talked about sort of that idea that we're always like sort of looking at people and saying like, oh, you're a little better than me, so I'm jealous and I'd like to get better than you, or like, you're not as good as me, and you're just whatever. You're just
wasting my time.
About the people I don't even care about, and it's this whole sort of like making a judgment. Like I know, and I'm gonna like write. You know, my little demon walks around writing down what everybody's doing right and wrong, because that's I'm gonna fix those people up, or I'm gonna catch up
to
that person who's better than me, because I'm really better than them. I just was letting them get ahead,
right?
To feel better.
That's so true. I was at the women's conference last night, you know, big one convention, and everybody was there, and all these women were doing this and that, and I was saying, oh my God, they've accomplished so much, you know, I've got to hurry up. I've got to hurry up, accomplished too. Look at all these women doing all this, and how old is she? And how old am I? Oh my God, she's younger, she's older. Oh my God, you know, it's just It was great energy, but I found myself starting to feel like caught into that trap. What you were just saying, describing.
Or the other trap of letting other people go ahead of you. What were you saying? There was another side of that.
No, it's like there's the people who are better than you and you want to catch them. The people aren't as good as you and you look down on them. And then the people you like and don't even care about.
We do all three categories. You know, more than just one
aggression
of them.
And ignorance.
By the way, you don't care about them only until they start to do better than you. Then you start caring.
But it's even that whole piece of sitting there and you know, the slogans are all about, like, why are you sitting there and deciding who's better and who's worse? Right. Like, and how would you possibly in any way be able to do that?
Yeah. Right.
Right. Well, you're further stuck too, because the one of the other ones is don't act with a twist, which is don't like be the last, because you're gonna be the first anyway, because you're the most you have the most what does it say about don't act with a twist?
I'm so humble.
You are the most humble.
So that's an antidote for the other side of it.
Yeah, I think we should cover that. Let's look at that one.
Which one?
Don't make gods into demons. 37.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're going to cover that.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, let's see what she says.
Okay. He says, don't turn gods into demons.
Yeah.
These two aspects are never totally separate sides of ourselves.
Oh.
They are capable of influencing, interacting with, and deluding one another. So, you know, we tend to see, you know, the demons are the bad, the gods are the good, benevolent and harmful.
So it's referring to the gods and demons within yourself?
We are angelic in certain respects and totally demonic in others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But these two aspects are never totally separate sides of ourselves, and they are capable of influencing, interacting, and deluding one another.
Mm. So what is it? That's all it says?
No. There's. I'm giving you like what I highlighted.
The pith instructions.
What I thought was like. Yeah, what I thought was a really good. But it is. Don't turn gods into demons.
Mm. Don't make gods into demons. Yes.
But I'm reading his translation.
They're different.
We haven't got an operative thing. What does it?
How do we work with that?
Being vigilant with our practice. Mm-hmm. He just goes, I think it's mostly just being aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Aware of what?
How would you turn a god into a demon except that
you would ignore yourself.
In other words, you would pay more attention to...
Let's say...
The demons inside you at the cost of overlooking the gods.
But let's say you did something really virtuous. I mean, just spontaneously, you know, completely, there was no premeditation, you just rose to the occasion and you really accomplished something wonderful. And the next thing you do is you start taking credit for it. I mean, this is the example of something really fundamentally good in himself, and had nothing other than a natural response and really great accomplishment. Then suddenly becomes trash.
So self-righteous.
Yeah. Crap.
Is that when someone gets donations?
You turn it into your own private. That's an example.
Right.
And that's your demon. Become your demon.
Same situation. Same stuff.
I think we have a reading.
Yeah. They may have started out with talking about the people who do this. They may have started out with sincerity and enthusiasm, but this gradually becomes corrupted when they begin to turn something beneficial and worthwhile into something egotistical and self-congratulatory.
Yeah. Right.
Even if we are extremely well-versed and learned in spiritual matters, we'll compromise all our good qualities with this one defect if we don't guard against our egoism, for an inflated sense of self-esteem is completely anathema to the low joint spirit.
If you want, it's like a campaign promise in our political system. And people basically vote people in on all this sweet talk and wonderful kind of scenarios. They get a promise if they're going to get in there. And the next thing you do, all they do is perpetuate this corrupt system. I mean, we're seeing this in a very, very exaggerated time right now of all the revelation. But that's basically...
But this slogan is for ourself, for someone else.
Yeah. No, but I mean, the possibility of something good being turned into bad is what we're talking about. It's something fundamentally good. And yet, the badness and the goodness are intrinsically part of the same nature. It's not like it's other than what...
Where's the don't give up?
It's in there.
Is there a don't give up?
Don't wallow in self-pity.
Are we on six?
Are we still on six?
Are you just hoping for it? Where does that come from?
Actually, that's a good point. The guidelines of mind training are it's sort of, it is a don't give up. Our attitude and willingness to be in the present moment and apply mindfulness to every situation. So as we go further, you know, we'll just keep applying this. Point seven, we'll go into that at another time. Mm. So I think the point is we don't give up. And we have to give up now.
Don't expect that.
But I'd like to say that next week Joseph is going to go back to point three, which wasn't totally... he's going to cover slogan 14, 15, and 16, which are the absolute bodhicitta skillful means. I think that's what it's called. But look in your book. And that point three was divided into two sections. So Erica covered the first three. You did that with Elise, right? You, Eric,
took
and
two of us to do those three. We left the three hard ones for Joseph.
And we did leave the three hard ones for Joseph. So he'll be covering that next week. And then one thing you could be thinking about is, like, going forward as a group, what would you like to do in terms of area of study, or would you like to go more in depth in the Lojong, keep on with that? There's some that we haven't covered. But you, and also, would you like to have more meditation if we do it like twice a month? Like that, I did that guided meditation last week. People were really engaged with that. Whether that's something that would be useful going forward in terms of maybe twice a month doing more extensive meditation. So you can think about those things, and you can send any of us a note, or, you know, we're not doing a survey because they never really work. But think about what's important to you in terms of what you'd like to know more about.
We talked about one undying.
And we did, yeah. So I didn't get to get back to you. Yeah, things are progressing in Tubman.
Okay.
But yes, we had. I'd also thought about doing something on looking at death and dying, and I was going to have Megan work on that too in terms of the curriculum. But again, these things could come at different points. They don't have to come right now either. So I just feel that's a really important topic, and it's real like this in, you know, a little different way, you know, in terms of contemplating death. So that's a topic. So you can actually think of other areas too, and you could make some suggestions. So we're in the process of formulating the curriculum for this, you know, January through June or so. So just give us some suggestions if you have anything. So let's close with the dedication of merit.